It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
It's a stacked crunch time, given we've had four games already in Anzac round, and we shape up for two big ones today. Carlton and Geelong at the MCG, and then over in the West, Fremantle and the Bulldogs. There's ramifications dripping off that game. Crunch time is for Azito. Do it yourself. Do it with Azito. Do you. And Freeway Motor Group, Cranbourne, Frankston, Mornington and Lilydale. Mark Bickley and David King are our experts in place today. Jared Waitley and Sam Edmonds with you. We've looked back on the draw of Anzac Day and Port Adelaide's victory over St Kilda last night. The hot seat is really clear for Razorback 4x4. There's nothing like Razorback 4x4. On the means test last week, Kingy, we had the Brisbane Lions sort of on spec as the big issue. Would we be shortly be talking about them not only as missing the top four should they lose in Canberra, but a risk of missing the eight? And it felt like we were propelled there on Thursday night.
They're a hard watch at the moment, aren't they? They just look like, I don't know whether they've got... They've got the investment. They just look really dull. They look like they're playing a plain brand of football. There's no real enthusiasm. There's no spark. It's just difficult to see them getting out of this. This is the challenge that Chris Fagan's got now. And I don't know whether they need to bring in a couple of young fellas just to get some enthusiasm back, just to get some run. It looked like they looked as slow as I've ever seen them, Bix.
Yeah, the second half. And it was exacerbated by the fact that they played the Giants, who looked fantastic, and they ran and they had speed. But I think also when you heard the press conference after the game and you heard Chris Fagan, he was listless. He, you know, sounded bewildered and without answers and you know, flat and tired. And it just didn't really fill me with confidence that he was, you know, like generally he's your favourite uncle. He's the guy who, you know, makes you feel like okay about yourself. But he really sounded as if he was pulling his hair out as well at what is going on.
Nine unanswered goals. That's the other thing, isn't it? The big run-ons of goals. They had their noses in front halfway through the second and then just totally obliterated. Nine unanswered goals, Kingy.
Yeah, it's not even about the scoring or the defensive holes. It's just the look of them. They just don't look the same side. And I've floated this a few times with you, Jared. I know that when the investment to get to a grand final and just miss out, and like just miss out, like 4 points, what, 2 minutes of footy, just miss out is so large that I just wonder whether it's tipped them over the edge.
Deflating.
Just the hole in the pit of your stomach that it creates for the next sort of 6 months, and you've got to go through all that again just to get another opportunity. It is taking its toll, I think, on this group, and they've been there for a long time. The window doesn't just stay open. Will Ashcroft has a massive impact on this group, no doubt, and he's a huge loss. Coleman is a massive loss. He's their wild card off halfback. He does different things with the footy. So they're two players they really couldn't afford to lose for the year this year. But outside of that, I don't know how they get it back, Bix, apart from just challenging one another and seeing if you can find a response. But is that really going to hold sway?
Well, it's a good point you make about the grand final. And you look in my backyard here in Adelaide, who made the grand final in 2017, they haven't been near it since. 18 was a abject failure. 19, they tried to recycle the same players again, where they probably should have started the investment in the youth. Then they sort of burnt the place to the ground, and now they're sort of on the way up and spluttering again. So it's been 6 years for Adelaide. And Port Adelaide had that same hiatus after... you know, they had their sort of really bad loss in 07. They went 5 years without making finals. So you don't have to look too far into history to see a number of examples of that. But, yeah, I'm a little bit worried about him as well because some of the players that are playing well for him, Dane Zorko's been the one guy who looks like he's got a bit of fight. Mm. Where's that younger group of players, that sort of midsection Hipwood, McCluggage and Dunkley and those guys? I know they're trying, but they're the ones that really have to pick up the cudgels, and at the moment they haven't been able to do so.
And what can you see in individuals? So Lachie Neale, that's sort of the second time this year he's been fined for striking, and just the cumulative toll of effort on effort, campaign on campaign, and whether it just gets a hold of you for a while or for a... It could be just completely exhausted, but to look at him is to go, he's feeling it.
Yeah, he is. And in the end, it goes too far. Bubble, the investment bubbles over. We see it with Toby Green. Look, Toby was always going to bump someone just on the edge of outside of the laws last week. He's going to do something because he was just, the game wasn't going the way he wanted it to, and he was frustrated. You're seeing the same with Lachie Neale. All the great competitors, the absolute nth degree, you know, top shelf competitors, they bubble over when things are not as they should be. I can see that with Lachie at the moment. I think he's a sort of leader that had probably grabbed the group this week early, Bix. I reckon it's almost the powwow time. Hey, what are we doing here? What are we doing with this season? Where are we going? We need more from you. We need this from you. Like a real honesty, you know, circle of wagons type meeting.
The other thing that is coming into focus is when you're a player and you've chased a premiership, and you know it's the only thing in your world, and you are so single-mindedly about making all the sacrifices and everything you can do, that realization, the moment you tip over that mountain where you think, you know what, is our window closing now, and I'm too old now to have a rebuild and to be able to come back again and do it again. And I think of the St Kilda side with Nick Riewoldt and all those great players when they tipped over, and you know, credit to Lee Montagna and Nick Riewoldt because they hung around, but others left. And you can look at Adelaide with Taylor Walker and Rory Sloane. Once it went down, they literally are resigned to knowing they're not going to play in a premiership. And that's a really tough thing mentally when you've set your whole sort of career and standing on being that, you know, achieving that one ultimate prize in life. So I just wonder whether that belief in self is starting to be questioned as well.
Yeah, once you lose that aura from the outside too, like Collingwood last year, I was looking, how do we match this? How do we play like that? I'm seeing that with GWS right now. How do we match that? Don't have a bad day against the Giants because you'll bleed for 20 goals. That's the sort of thing we're talking about. Once you look vulnerable, you're in trouble as a contender in our competition. When I look at Brisbane, I don't know where they get you. Where do they actually hurt you now? Because down back, they look gettable. Up forward, they don't look like that front six that we lauded the last 2 years. In the midfield, yeah, Lachie Neale, terrific. Outside of Lachie, I mean, Rayner went crazy for six quarters of footy.
Yeah.
Bailey's a big out. I understand all of that. But I just don't think it's there. It just doesn't feel like they're as complete as they've been.
The next 3 weeks are really interesting by virtue of the fact they should be winning them. And if they drop one of them, I mean, it's Gold Coast, it's Adelaide, it's Richmond, and then the bye. So they have to be turning 5-5 at the bye, or there's the alarm bells are really ringing.
Yeah, that was the opportunity, I thought, in Thursday night, as this was the chance to get on a run, and then having been so, well, they were abject. One loss from here, you spend your whole season just trying to find parity. And if you unexpectedly lose one of these games, the toll of that. So, the one thing I'd say about the Lions is I reckon because of their profile, it's possible to have a gap year just through sheer exhaustion of effort, because they've got one Ashcroft and two Ashcrofts.
Yep.
They've got Coleman. So there's no reason to think that if they did have the dip this year, that that's the end of it. They don't strike me as an old team. It's been a long campaign. But they have the rejuvenation of youth that we actually already know that will come back into their
team.
They
don't really lose anyone, do they, King?
Yeah, I like the idea of what you're saying, but I don't know if that's... So they only had three players younger than 24 and a half the other day.
Yeah, but...
Giants had 13. So it's all a comparison industry, really.
Yes, but I guess what I'm saying is we know that they don't have to go out and find their youth. They've got Coleman, Ashcroft, and they're getting the other Ashcroft, and Fletcher's coming up. So they already have on their list the wave of young players.
McCluggage
as
is
well as what you would naturally
have. McCluggage is going to stay. I know they're not young players, but they're at the core. Berry's going to stay as well.
Yeah. You might be right. I don't know. I just think there's teams that are coming good now. I look at the Giants and I think, okay, you're going to come up against them when they've had their six. They had six players with 100 games experience this week. Brisbane had 16. When their six becomes 12, 14, 16, how the hell are you going to compete with them? They looked. I mean, we've got to talk about that.
Yeah, so the Lions are on the hot seat. Razorback 4x4, Australia's best four-wheel drive seat covers with protection like no other. Were you drawn toward this being the win of the season?
Oh, yeah. This was as good a performance as you'll see. Because they bought in the young fella. The gnome with
Darcy
the dome.
Jones.
Yeah, he was a ripper.
Where's his tent going up? We've got the Tom Green fan club. We had the DJ tent next to it.
I bought a helmet. I got one already. They look terrific. Wasn't he exciting? Didn't he get them going?
And interesting, Darcy Jones holds the record for the agility test at the draft camp. You didn't have to look very far to see why, did he? He was zipping and zapping. And just look at their list profile as well. They got Harvey Thomas and Darcy Jones. They both look 15 for a start. One's 175, one's 176. Toby Bedford's 179. But they all have electrifying speed. You chuck Brent Daniels in there at 172. It's a bit of a breaking of the mold of this. You can't have all these little players, but they've got a weapon, and you're just watching Jones and Bedford and Daniels around goals. They are so dangerous, and Thomas kicked two yesterday as well. But the speed and the way they get at the opposition and then run away from the opposition was exhilarating to watch. There's a couple of goals. They went the length of the field, chains of ambles. It was like the 70s again. The loose man over the top, and end up with Joe the Goose in the goal square. It was magic.
Just do something. The run and gun was unreal. So when you look at their profile, and we keep talking about, I reckon season 24 is about being able to punish. So they're the number one team that punish you from stoppage, and they're the number one team that punish you from intercept. So anytime they've got the ball, they're the best in the comp. Now, a lot of people say, oh, but they haven't played anyone. Well, they played a pretty decent team on the weekend and made them look second rate. The one player I would be resting Jesse Hogan in the next couple of weeks. Very similar to the Charlie Dixon discussion. He's never played a full season. He missed three games last year in a couple of stints. He missed four games the year before in three or four different stints. He missed 11 in 2021 in three or four different stints. He's the most targeted player in the competition. So when they go forward, it's Jesse. I think they've just got to – now you've banked your wins, just manage your list. It worries me because they've got some pretty handy players to come back next week.
Yes.
Taylor, Toby Green and Stephen Cornelio. You're going to find it hard to omit players.
Well, the one player that I love seeing do some really nice stuff yesterday was Finn Callahan. Oh, so he's pick three from the 2021 draft. He is just pure smoothness, isn't he?
And how do you get a left peg like that?
Yeah, and he's taken some time. He's 192, so he's the prototype size, and eventually he'll probably move into the midfield. 192, covers the ground, kicks it beautifully. And he has just been a slow burn, but yesterday, maybe in the absence of Cornelio and Green and others, he stood up and I thought he was excellent.
So their next, it's the Sydney derby next week against the Swans at the SCG.
It's never a good time to rest anyone. There isn't. No one ever wants to say, yep, that's the game. But I just think sometimes you've got to take it out of the players' hands. If he goes down, it'll have massive ramifications on their outlook.
If West Coast can rest Harley Reid against the wishes of a state, Jared, then it's possible.
But that's the flight over to Gold Coast. Broadway.
It's a very winnable game for them.
One of the biggest games of the season.
But do you think it was a win of the year?
I felt like that's... The Giants have got depth that they've never had before, I feel. So maybe they finished at sort of 26 in the past. A lot of high ends. They go a bit deeper than that now. Yeah, the second half was absolutely startling.
Unreal. I was inquiring up north, where have you been hiding the kid with the lid? And they said, don't worry, we've got another one coming.
Phoenix
is on his way. Mm. I thought, not another one. Have we given them too many concessions this mob?
No, I don't know.
They've
the Kangas need more, Jared. The Crows can do with a couple.
Through their player market, as people kept getting poached and they just keep
some smart decisions.
The arms. Yeah. No, so, and they do play I think they play the most attractive footy, don't they?
Oh, they do. He's done a great job. They're the most watchable team in the comp right now.
Yeah, yeah. To Wednesday night, this wasn't terribly watchable through the first half, and we on the outside weren't the only ones feeling it.
Oh, I wouldn't have wanted to be a spectator for that game. I would have gone to bed at half time.
It was a pretty scrappy affair. You know, I think anyone watching the game, some of the turnovers, it was extraordinary, to be honest. It made a few people laugh in the box and certainly down the bench. Like, that's just pretty unlike us.
If you didn't laugh, you'd cry. So that's what was at play there. Christian Petrarca and Simon Goodwin. Melbourne nutted out the win that they had to get with the class gap just opened up in the second half.
Yeah, it did. But I want to talk about Melbourne in a different way. So they're evolving in the way they play. So it's a bit clunky at the moment. There's some horrific turnovers. So that's not Melbourne. We haven't seen that before. But they're trying to play with a bit more freedom with the ball. They realise that if you can't score off that half-back wedge, that it's called the defensive mid-zone. So from the centre circle to the top of 50 in your back line there, that half-back counterpunch, if you can't score from there, you really can't compete. So you look at the Premiers the last 5 or 6 years, scoring from defensive mid-zone. Last year, number one was Collingwood in the flag. 2022 was Geelong. 2021, it was Geelong. 2020, it was Richmond. 2019, it was Richmond. It's that counterpunch when the opposition are disorganised and you've got full use of the oval. They Melbourne last year, were 17th post-bye at scoring from counterpunch off halfback. So they know this. They can't win it without this being corrected. So this year, they've gone to third in terms of their ability to turn that possession into a score. Now, that's a significant shift, Bix. And I like the fact that they're at least trying and exploring what this group can do. It looks awful at times, but they've got 15 weeks to get it right.
Is this because perhaps in years gone by, they've probably turned it over a bit deeper? You know, with Lever and May, it's probably inside the D50. So they've probably just tried to bring that up a little bit higher up the ground, which, as you say, makes it so much easier to be able to score from. You only have to get past probably 8 to 10 defenders as opposed to 14 if you turn it over in your own defensive 50. So, yeah, look, and doing so without, you know, the disruption of Angus Brayshaw so late, I think that has sort of unsettled them a little bit as well. Salem's been in and out and they've tried to reshape his role and he was pretty settled across that half-back line. So I think the longer this goes, and I think they're still trying to find their forward setup clearly. Petty's just sort of struggling in that role. They maybe thought they might get a little bit more out of him. They introduced a couple of youngsters into the front half who looked okay. So very much a work in progress for my Melbourne. And if you can continue to win whilst you're still honing and refining, I think that's a really good sign. And they've still got sort of plenty of upside.
That's what struck me is they had 8 players with 40 games or fewer and 5 of them single figures. So they're trying to change who they are, trying to evolve whilst winning. So Ross Lyon spoke about that last night. That's the trick, is if you can win and evolve, or Luke Beveridge is trying to re-emerge, is that was a really interesting profile for a team that's been right at the pointy end for a lengthy period of time. They are trying. They're trying a lot. And well, they should be at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's going to look messy at times. And then in the end, you got 3 or 4 guys that just say, hey, we know how to win. Like Max Gawn just knows how to win games. And Christian Petrarca knows when closing time is upon him. Hey, we've got to get this job done. And they just find a way, don't they, Bix? And it's a luxury that – Max Gawn is a luxury that no other club has. Like he just has an ability to stamp – himself on the game. He's another one I've got on watch. So this year, last year it was Ken Grundy and Gawn work and they split ruck minutes. So they got to the back half of the year. Now, whether you like the decision or not, it's not that discussion. His minutes in the ruck were managed by the fact that there was the second ruck there. That's not the case at the moment. I get concerned that in round 20, it's been a long year. So I wonder how they're going to manage Max over the next couple of months.
Yeah, and you can probably, you can spread that out to 5 or 6 other senior players. You talk about Max being super competitive. Then in the same breath, Viney, Petrarca, Oliver, and then go down back and you look at Lever and May, and they've just got enough competitors, like you said. When it's time to put the foot down, generally they can do enough, particularly against sides like Richmond and the sort of bottom half of the ladder. They can still find that way. And if you can blood those players that you mentioned, Jared, at the same time, then that's a very healthy position to be in.
And what did Uze do? Uze tagged Petrarca, which Christian had a chuckle about in the aftermath. But that was a proper hard tag from Marlon Pickett, who used the old, all the old world tactics.
He was a throwback. You were talking about the 70s before, Bix. This was an old school tag, wasn't it? Go everywhere with him. I thought it was great. It's an interesting discussion. So the week before, Brisbane used the wingman. The game before, they had a week off. So 2 weeks ago, Brisbane used the wingman against Petrarca. It was Berry, it was Archie, it was Fletcher. So it wasn't just one player, but every stoppage, the wingman, instead of taking his normal position, would go and tag Petrarca at stoppage. And he struggled. It was his worst performance for a little while in terms of impact on game. He was the 15th rated Melbourne player that night. So he had to show to... Not, he didn't have to show, but I think these competitors wanted to show that, I don't care if you tag me, I'm going to respond. And he did that. And I thought Marlon was very good as well. Now, Richmond just didn't have the forward 50 target to match it. They were on top at the start of that game. They were very good for the first 30 minutes. But Lynch not being there just leaves such a hole.
I love Petrarca's language after the game, though. They asked him about Pickett's tactics and that. And he just said, look, I love the challenge. It's something that I'm now dealing with and it's great and I'm now able to use that to put the opposition out of position to benefit the team. You know, the other way could have been, and talked about all the reasons why perhaps he hasn't impacted the game as much to the extent we are used to from Christian Petrarca. But I just love the fact that he sees it as a challenge. He's taken it on. And, you know, if any other taggers out there, they're looking at, you know, can I upset him? Can I get under his skin? Does he dislike being tagged? He just said, oh, well, that's the challenge with being good effectively, and he's just going to get on with it. So from a coach or from a supporter, watching your best player talk like that, I just reckon was great messaging.
The wash up from that game, Sam. So Hopper injured again and Pickett with the fine.
Very curious explanation too on the tape from Adam Uzo that might have been his leg might have been strapped too tightly, and then he'd never done a hamstring before. He didn't know how it felt. And you saw him try to play on under discomfort. He's had an injury-interrupted year already, so that's a savage blow for a club who's had many of them. But I was taken to Disco Turner. We've just got to talk about Daniel Turner. Max Gawn might be many things. List manager he is not, to confess with you on Fox, Kingy, that he told him out on the field, you've just walked into an $8-year, $1 million-a-year contract. We've been looking for this sort of player for ages, and here he steps out of the VFL. It was awesome.
It was awesome. Well, it is exciting when these young kids, we talked about the young blokes up at GWS, when a young player comes in and does that, it's exciting for everyone. You can see a lift from the senior core players at Melbourne, and the fans just, oh, we've found one.
And another disco running around too, so that's straight out of Bix's 70s as well, so it's another 70s flavour.
Retro round.
Yeah.
The fine for the punch of Pickett, so this had a ripple of debate in the immediate aftermath.
Yeah, so $3,750 was the fine for that one. Was it a tummy tap? Was it something more substantial? I thought they got it about right, although it's been measured up with many other punches that are off the ball, in contest, out of contest. The AFL sort of painted themselves into a bit of a tight spot with some of those comparisons already this year. But I thought it was on the money, Jim.
Where are you, Bix? Are you a hardcore on the punch, or each just gets assessed? What's your view in that spectrum?
I think Pendlebury should have been suspended for one game. I think this one here is a one-game suspension as well. If you punch someone when they're not looking or they're not expecting it, or, you know, you're not actually contesting the ball, it's just not something we need in our game, because what ends up happening is Andrew Gaff swings an arm and doesn't mean to punch Andrew Brayshaw, but it bounces off his shoulder and breaks his jaw. And then we all get outraged at that. Yet we allow punching in our game. And I think Jesse Hogan was a little bit lucky as well. 100 metres off the ball, swinging a punch and even lightly collecting someone. It's just not something we need in our game. And every time we give someone a fine, and depending on, you know, these guys are earning lots and lots of dollars, for some of those people, it will be, who cares? I'll just go play next week and won't change my behaviour.
And it was the rule that was written tough over the off-season, the change. It was the Charlie Ballard inspired rule. So it read tough. It read as like, well, we are zero tolerance now, as Big says. We are coming for you in this regard. And yet it's been powder puff ever since. To answer your question, I wasn't surprised by virtue of what we've already seen this year. They've already made their bed. Now they've got a line at the AFL. And that's even without getting to Tom Barras playing the good bloke card at the tribunal as well, Jared. And he had to do it. He just didn't quite meet the 200-game threshold.
No, and this is the folly of what happened the week before, is it's going to have to repeat all year until it gets closed down at the end of the season.
There was an opportunity missed. We talked about this on Monday. We haven't backed over this. There was an opportunity missed by Toby Green. Toby should have gone in and said, you know what, everyone goes the good guy card. I'm going the other way. if I wanted to kill this guy, I would have killed him. So the fact that I've done this, yeah. I've actually taken all the care I could to save his life here. I reckon they went the wrong way, Jared. They pulled the wrong card.
David Gray's take a bow for Tom Barras, though. He laid it on super thick. You know, he's got the two kids, a few philanthropic interests, the ambassador for White Ribbon Australia, the 16 Days in WA campaign, glowing character references. One happened to be from a teammate, but the other one was from the former chair, Russell Gibbs, of the Footy Club as well. But just 138 games of that suspension, Jared. All right, so you're 62 shy, Tom.
I love just how ridiculous it is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I wonder if Jeff Gleeson was sitting there going, oh, what have I done?
Had to have been. Yeah,
every case is going to go an hour longer than it should.
Well, he wasn't on your list. You drew up the list of, what was it,
35 players.
Tom Barras wasn't there. No. He should have known. He should have checked.
Brush up your community service and make sure it's all intact.
Now ineligible for life. That's it.
That's right. He's got his suspension.
Yeah, he's done.
He'll never get there.
What a shocking night he's had.
He's a bad bloke, officially.
All right. So we're working our way through crunch time. Those are the games that have been. The change in edicts for the goal umpires, mercifully. That's a good rule. The Harley Balick story, which is really serious. We'll drill into North Melbourne and Adelaide and then set you up for the big games on Saturday. Mark Bickley and David King in place for our Round 7 edition of Crunch Time.